1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until three today. Caoimhe Proud-Murphy, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you, Caoimhe?
Not too bad, good. Enjoying the sunshine.
Indeed, we all are. And you got the text, Caoimhe, that we've all been waiting for, the vaccination text.
Yeah, I did. I got the text on Monday.
And you were going to where?
Out to City West. So I got the text message on Monday, and I have a newborn baby. She's 3 months old. So my concern was, obviously, would I be able to bring her with me? Because my husband works for the ambulance service and he's got shift works. And then my immediate family are all living abroad. So and because I'm breastfeeding my baby, I wanted to know, could I bring her with me or not? So that's where it started anyway.
Okay, so did you call the HSE?
Yeah, I called the Liveline or the helpline on Tuesday morning because I'd seen, I'm in a Facebook group with other mothers, and I'd seen that they were refusing entry to mums with young babies in City West. So I called the helpline and they were like, yeah, no, absolutely, you can arrive with your baby, that's no problem. And I said, are you sure? Like, I've been seeing online that mums are being refused entry. And they're like, no, you're the second mum to call us this morning. We've called the help, you know, HSE head office this morning. Our supervisor has done that. And you'll absolutely guaranteed entry. Don't worry about it. We've been in contact with City West. So I was like, okay, grand. You know, I felt a bit relieved by that. So I went out on Thursday morning for my vaccination. And I was refused entry. I was pulled aside and said, no, you can't come in with your baby.
And was that, I mean, you know, if people haven't been yet for their vaccination, you sign up first, they make sure that your appointment is on the day, and then you go inside. So it was it when you were at your initial point of entry that this was brought up with you?
Yeah, so basically I was pulled out of the line before you could even register, and said, oh, can you come over here, please? We need to chat to you. And they basically said, oh, City West are refusing anybody with any mums with their babies aren't allowed in. And I said, well, I called the HSC helpline and they said I could come. And they're like, no, that's not the case. And I was like, well, can you look at the, like, I had checked the HSC, you know, the guidance about arriving to your vaccination centre. And it said, you know, if you have no other option for childcare, you can come and sign a waiver. And the person I spoke to said, we've never heard of this waiver and we're not letting any children in, and that the HSC website is wrong, and that the person I spoke to on the helpline was wrong as well. And yeah, so
and
while I was there...
go on.
No, while I was there, another mum in the same situation who had called the helpline, and they had said, yeah, no problem, turn up with your three-month-old. And again, she was refused entry.
And was there any possibility that it was somebody more junior there at City West that you happened to run into that maybe weren't aware of the policy?
No, like a fairly senior person came out and from the, like, a representative from the HSE. She's, I don't want to say what position she was, but she was senior enough and said, no, absolutely no way, we're not letting any mums in. And yeah, you need to come back.
So there you are, you're standing outside with your baby in your arms.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Well, I was in the lucky position that, like, a friend just randomly came past and they offered to, you know, mind my baby. So I was fortunate in that, like, that was available to me. But the other woman that was there at the same time left. And I know, like, a friend of mine, same situation today, turned up at City West with her baby, was told it was okay, and she put out a message on social media to see if any of her friends were there, and no one was there, so she left. So
right.
Like,
so it's not a once off. It is something that's happening. Well, obviously you have two other cases there that you're aware of from your personal position. But how is it then? Because I know I did see that note on the HSE, you know, the data you get and that you refer to. And it does say that if you have no other options, that you can bring a child.
I in that Facebook group I'm in, other mothers have said they've turned up to the likes of Aviva and they've been accommodated down in the country. They've been accommodated with young babies or breastfeeding babies. Absolutely no problem. And it just seems to be, I don't know if City West is an outlier or the communication channels have been skewed, but it seems to be City West is the problem for nursing mothers.
Yeah, and of course that is a key point of it. You're breastfeeding, so you can't just drop your baby with anyone.
No.
And obviously other people as well. I don't know how far you travel to City West, but I suppose some people would be travelling some distance, which would complicate matters as well.
Yeah, I know that there's a photo up on Twitter of a mum minding other mothers' babies, and one of them had come up from Wexford. So could you imagine coming up from Wexford and then being told you can't get the vaccine? So it just seems to be, we're at the age cohort now that this is going to happen to, you know, to mums with very young babies.
I was actually just thinking that when I went in, I didn't see any people with babies, but of course, it's a younger cohort than myself would be bringing babies with them. This is going to be an issue. I know we did ask the HSE to clarify what their policy on breastfeeding mothers at vaccine centres was. We haven't got a response back from them yet. If we get it, we will bring it to you during the show. Can I ask you, having a baby during COVID, in the time of COVID, how was it for you, Caoimhe?
It was pretty lonely, obviously going to all the appointments by yourself and going through labour. The hospital and the nurses and all the doctors are amazing, but you kind of miss out on, you know, having your partner there with you. And I suppose turning up at the vaccination centre, you're kind of, you know, this is the start of the end and you're looking forward to getting that vaccine, and then to be told, oh no, you can't. Is frustrating, probably, is how I would put it.
And did you have your partner with you for labour?
He was able to come in once I was in active labour, but apart from that, he wasn't allowed in at all. So they kind of miss out on all the scans, and I know that's being corrected now, but he did miss out on, you know, coming to the scans and being there at my appointments.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously everything worked out really well for you, Caoimhe, but we know, of course, there's been some heartbreaking stories of people who got very bad news in those scenarios and were on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. You do feel for people, you know, having to get devastating news and then having to go out and relay it to their partner out in the car park, you know. When I was in hospital, there was a woman she wasn't transferred to the labour ward for the guts of 12 hours maybe, and all she wanted was her husband up in the ward with her until she got moved down, and he wasn't allowed in. So I was lucky for my labour, it happened pretty quickly, but you know, for other women it's very hard.
Yeah, absolutely. But as we say, hopefully those policies are being revised and we're coming out of that, hopefully coming out of that time. And you know what, hopefully, Caoimhe, you will have to be explaining to your daughter in years to come what COVID was. And hopefully it'll just be a bad memory that we'll be telling telling the children who weren't there for it. And thank you so much for that. And we'll see if anybody else comes back to us in relation to that. And if we do get any line from the HSE on that before we come off air, we will obviously bring it to you. But thank you for that, Caoimhe.
Yeah.
And good luck with your little one. Okay, I want to go to a topic now that we covered yesterday, but we've got a huge amount of calls in on it since then. It's obviously a huge issue for a lot of people. Maureen Corbett, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Good. One-off housing, Maureen.
Well, we live in Clifton in Connemara, and we have a family farm that has been in my husband's family. We've traced the history back quite easily back to the 1860s, and the family tree extends on this particular property back to that era and further back. So it is been passed down from parent to child over the, you know, for the last 100 plus years.
Okay, so there's no doubting at all your family roots in this area.
No, the family roots are here, yeah. Okay. Where we actually live, it was originally a thatched cottage that dated nearly 400 years on the family farm. So we can go all the way back. So long story short, we have two sons, just two children. Both of them now are in their early 30s. Both have partners. And in 2008, unfortunately, my husband was diagnosed with degenerative disc disease and he had to retire from his job. Now, he was trying to also keep the family farm going throughout this time, but as he got progressively worse, we decided we had no option but to divide the family holding, the family farm, into two and to give one half to each son. So the first son applied for planning permission and the land was in his name. He had a Department of Agricultural herd number, that he had cattle on the farm. He also was trying to establish and to keep the Connemara native bee that his grandfather had started and had hives down through the years. And this is in danger of dying out. So he was trying to research and get involved and to try and see if he could work on maintaining and keeping the Connemara native bee going in the area and to have a little honey farm as well as the cattle on his land. So he applied for planning permission back in 2020, spring 2020, and he was refused. Now, I can read just a little bit, a sentence of his housing need. This came out from Galway County Council on the 31st of August, 2020. It says, under housing need, having examined the content of the file in this regard, the applicant is not considered to comply with objective or HO3 of the county plan. The application is devoid of sufficient detail to verify that the applicant has a long-established intrinsic links to this particular rural area. We submitted his birth certs, our birth certs, our marriage certificate. He had the farm in his name, the land registry, the folio number, the Department of Agricultural herd number, proof of his school records, national and secondary in the area. You know, his utility bill, you know, membership from the local club. We provided photographs, we provided everything. And this is what we received back.
And did he, I mean, was there a conversation with the planners in relation to that point?
No, they're blaming COVID, but throughout the whole process, we haven't been able to contact any of the planners directly. Now, I know that's not the case because another family member of mine has recently applied in Limerick County Council, and the applicants themselves are quite easy able to pick up the phone or an email and speak to the planner. That is not the process in Galway County Council. You cannot speak to a planner. We have our engineer finds it very difficult to speak to the planners. This is the feedback we get back from them. And we then beseeched local councillors to try and reach out to them and try and discuss with them. And they also find it was next to impossible to meet with them. Because they were saying it was due to COVID at the time and that they weren't meeting anybody. But you could, you know, throughout COVID, we were all able to answer a phone, answer an email quite safely from home or elsewhere throughout the whole COVID pandemic.
And are you saying, just to be clear, is the farm in your son's name yet?
Yes.
It is.
His one half of it is in his own name, yes. And he has been refused twice now. The second refusal came through on the 5th of May this year.
And specifically, are you saying that this issue about community ties or local ties was cited? Was there other issues about, you know, how obtrusive the development might be?
There were minor mentions around, they looked for further information in relation to the cross sections of a particular drawing and, you know, and things like that. But the biggest two were the housing need, that they don't have a housing need, number one, even though neither of them have a house in their name in of any shape or manner or form in any part of the world. And the second one is that they cannot prove that they have a connection or a link to the area, even though the link has quite clearly been established there.
And your second son, has he tried as well?
Yes, he has just been refused. His first application was just refused last week. And I can read from his one. It says, it is considered the applicant has not demonstrated long-standing local intrinsic rural links to the area and therefore does not meet the housing need criteria to build a new house in this rural area.
It's quite baffling. I mean, I'm just wondering, are we missing something in this?
You and me both. You know, and they go on to say that if they, you know, if they were to grant, it would contravene materially objectives, and a development management standard contained in the county development plan would be contrary to the sustainable rural housing guidelines, and therefore would be contrary to the sustainable development of the area. So I don't understand how refusing to grant young people, local people, permission to build on their own family lands, to live and work at a family farm in a community they were born and raised in, their parents, their grandparents, great-great-grandparents before them, would only help to promote and protect the economic, social and cultural development in an already rapidly dying rural area.
I was just going to ask you, like, what is that area like now where you're there in Clifton?
Oh, it's you know, it's nearly 100% dependent on either small farms, fishing and or tourism, seasonal tourism. That's it. In off-peak tourist season, you know, there's tumbleweed. The shops shut down, the restaurants shut down, the hotels shut down. You know, we go into hibernation mode because there isn't enough young people with families in the area who can keep these doors open. So we're all suffering as a result. So the government, on the one hand, are spending a fortune trying to roll out high-speed broadband connectivity to everyone in rural Ireland to promote people being able to live and work remotely. And yet in this area, it's a huge issue. I'm not the only person. I'm sure you'll get many calls on this, that young people they can't afford to buy a property in the area. If they were to try and buy a house, the rare house comes up for sale here, you're looking at €500,000 to €1 million, and they can't afford it. So only the very wealthy from outside of the area can actually afford to buy a property, and then that just becomes a holiday home, and that's only lived in for a couple of weeks of the year. Like, the vast majority of the houses around here in the wintertime and off season are empty. They're only busy for the summer season because there is no industry. We don't have factories. We don't have manufacturing. There is nothing else in the area for them to do. There is nothing to rent. If you went onto daft.ie there and you checked it out, you will not find any long-term, very little long-term housing that young people can afford to.
And yet,
to rent either.
I was reading some statistics there before we came on air, saying that Galway, I think, has some of the highest numbers of one-off housing in the country, and the highest numbers of planning permissions granted for one-off housing. So, and if you drive around, you know, your county, you will see an awful lot of one-off housing, and a lot of it, you know, recently developed. So what is going on in your case?
I don't know. I don't see what options that, like, the boys have both, they're only in their early 30s, they've both been working really hard trying to scrape together the money to be able to secure a mortgage to try and build their own house on their own family farm so that they can live and rear their children in the future in the area they grew up in, to support the local community and to keep the local schools open, try and keep the local post offices open, try and keep the local shops and businesses open, you know, to contribute positively year-round to the local area. And if they don't get this planning permission, they're already, I mean, Shane is almost at the end of his savings, because it costs thousands and thousands of euro each time you have to get drawings and get an engineer and get architects, you have to get reports.
That's
and a specialist.
That's the other part of it.
Yeah, he's already spent thousands of euro just failing to get a house or a planning permission on his family farm. Now, we're not trying to look for, you know, be the exception to the rule or, you know, go against any of the regulations or the planning regulations. He's quite happy to build, you know, whatever house size, shape, design, colour, creed that they seem fit or would be happy to on any part of his family farm.
But they're saying no. There's nothing. Are they giving any indication that there's a type of house that could work?
They don't really have an issue with the house. Their biggest issue comes back every time is that he cannot demonstrate a housing need, and he doesn't have any links to the area. So we're at a loss as to how we can further, what documentation we could provide them with that would satisfy that need from their perspective, because we have given everything, utility bills, bank statements, you know, birth certs, school records. We have given it all in, and it doesn't seem to be enough, but doesn't seem to be sufficient to tick that box from their perspective.
Yeah, God, I would just, it's as I said, baffling. It's extraordinary. I cannot understand how if that doesn't qualify as community links and links to the area, what would?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, in the last, since I've been here, so in the last 50 years, you're looking around, and lots of our neighbours have gone through this with their children. They haven't been able to secure planning permission. They tried one, two, three, four times, five times. They eventually run out of hope. They lose the will to live. They run out of money. The family give up in despair that the son or the daughter can actually take over the family holding, can live back in the area with them in their old age. So what ultimately tends to happen in the area is that property then and that farm goes up for sale.
Would that be your fear, Maureen, that ultimately this would mean that your sons would not be able to live there?
It will be because my husband can't farm it on, you know, he's getting older, his back is getting worse. You know, it will, if they cannot get permission to live in their own house. I mean, they're in their 30s. They don't want to live with mommy and daddy. Do you know what I mean? With their girlfriends or partners or wives, you know, and where's their children? There's no room in the house for them all to live anyway. We only have a small 3-bedroom. So ultimately, what has happened to most of our elderly neighbours, as this has happened to them in the past, they give up hope and the children move away. They either move to Galway, beyond, they go abroad, they go to America, they go to Australia, they go to Asia. And they don't see them very often. Grandchildren are reared away from their grandparents. Grandparents don't get to see their grandchildren. The family farm gets sold to the highest bidder. And what ultimately happens is somebody with deeper pockets or better connections or whatever the reason is, they are able to come down and get planning permission and build a holiday home. So that would account for some of the houses and one-off houses that you may have found on statistics. And then they have a holiday home. They come down for a couple of weeks of the year, every bank holiday, maybe here for Christmas for a few weeks of the year. And, you know, don't contribute to the schools, don't contribute to the local economy very much, a little bit, but not very much, and definitely not enough to make a sustainable difference to the economy, you know, or to the population of the area. I mean, when I, 45 years ago, I was in a local rural school that's, you know, in Roundstone. And at that stage, it's only 45 years ago, there was 150 children and 5 classrooms with 5 full-time teachers. Today, that exact same school is struggling to keep 2 full-time teachers with approximately 20 students. And that's not the exception with local national schools. That's the rule in this area.
Yeah.
We're heading down the road where it will just be one big empty holiday playground for the wealthy who have holiday homes here, who can come for a few weeks of the year. And it's beautiful to see them and we're delighted to welcome them. Don't get me wrong. But it needs to, the economy and the plan needs to be to keep local people here too, that they don't all, you know, if they emigrate, then there is a very real breaking of the intrinsic link to the family farm that has been inherited down through generations. There's a total break to their connectivity to the community they were born and reared in. And it's a permanent and irreversible loss of their birthright and their heritage. And that goes to the highest bidder from outside the area to come in, move in, take over the family lands and put up a holiday home on their original inheritance because they were unable to get past the planning application process with Galway County Council.
Maureen, thank you for that. You paint a very stark picture there. Let's hear what other people have to say about that. We'll take a break now. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Now, we'll get back to that planning issue in a moment, but I just want to go to Jay now. Jay, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about the funeral of Dean Maguire. There was a video online that people were caused quite a stir of the hearse carrying his body back to his home for the wake there last week, weaving through traffic and causing, you know, quite chaotic scenes there. But I believe the funeral is taking place today.
Well, we were driving up the Belgard Road. It's the Belgard-Cookstown Junction. There's a large Lewis crossing there. I don't know if people will know it
on the way out from Dublin.
So we're sitting at the traffic lights ready to go, and my partner was beside me, and an off-road dirt bike, you know, a scrambler bike, it wheelied up towards the junction. And I said to my partner, oh, look at this. It was followed by another 5, then another 6, and then all in all, there was about 15, 20 of them.
Scrambler bikes,
on the road, on the dual carriageway. They went out onto the Lewis crossing and proceeded like Garda outriders to stop all the traffic I'm not 100%, but I think they stopped the Lewis as well. So they stopped all the traffic, and it was like Mad Max. They were doing wheel spins, going round in circles, blocked the whole junction. And then a horse drawn, now the noise was ferocious. It was like something you see in Afghanistan. You know, the footage you would see. The noise was ferocious. And then this horse-drawn carriage came towards the junction. Obviously, it was a funeral carriage. With cars, with dozens of people sitting on the roofs of the cars, followed by a procession of probably 50 or more cars, all packed to the rafters full of people. And the main reason why I called your show was several reasons. That if I was unfortunate enough to have a family member pass away at the moment, I'm restricted by how many people I can bring to a funeral. Yet these people, it's absolutely, they can do whatever they want. And the fact they're able to stop traffic on non-road legal vehicles, I was filming it on my phone. I got told to put my phone away, which I did quickly.
Who told you to put your phone away?
One of them, I don't know, there was hundreds of them. One of them just said, put...
Did you get out of your car?
I didn't, no. I sat in my car and I just literally, jaw dropped. And my first thoughts were to film it. Foolishly, I was actually filming it on my dash cam. I didn't realise I have that footage from start to finish of the whole event. It was just the most lawless, anarchic thing I ever seen. There wasn't one guard. This was a situation where the army should have been. If they'd known this funeral was going ahead, I don't know any details of whose funeral it was or anything, but this situation was going on the streets of Dublin City. Not one guard there, not one army person there, nothing. And they could have done what they wanted. They could have dragged anyone out of a car. They could have done anything they wanted, and they would have got away scot-free. Just complete lawlessness. I've never seen anything like it, and I'm flabbergasted that it goes on. And it seems to be, if there's enough of you, and you're just doing what you want, and it's complete lawless, and it's a free-for-all, who's going to say anything?
Yeah, it sounds absolutely astonishing, I have to say.
I'd say there's 1,000 people have this on their dash cams, because every car was stopped. Everything. Every vehicle in the vicinity, everything was stopped. Nothing was getting out through that junction. Only them. And they looked like kids on the bikes. Not one of them looked old enough to be able to have a license to drive.
Yeah, and I believe it is the funeral cortege of Dean Maguire, and who of course is a young man himself, 29 years of age. And if people will remember from that reports of that accident on the M7 last week, where the car was crashed driving the wrong way up the N7.
I didn't know it was any of that. It was just something. So if it was that, you know, tragedy for the family, but to continue with the lawlessness, it's just phenomenal. I didn't know any of this, but if it was that, you would think the guards would have a presence, wouldn't you?
I'm surprised, I have to say, that there wasn't some guard the presence there. And come here, did you say you were challenged about filming it on your phone?
Yeah, I was filming it on my phone. I just thought, God, because you'd be telling people and they wouldn't believe you. It was ferocious. It was violent. It was, and they wouldn't believe you. Trying to explain to someone, it's hard to even explain to you how it was, you know. So you tend to always, you know, things you see, you take out your phone, you film it, you show, oh, look what I've seen. But this was just...
And then what happened?
I just got told, put the phone away.
By who? By who exactly?
I have no idea who.
But somebody knocked on your window or...
Oh, no, they were on the opposite side of the dual carriageway, but they'd shut down the whole junction. Every car around me was stopped. Everyone was just aghast at this event. Now, I'm sure they'd done it at every junction, en route to that junction. I wasn't unique from that. Now, that junction's probably a kilometre. I don't know. I'd presume in my head it was going to Newland? I don't know. There's a cemetery off the road there near the fire station. I presume they were heading that direction. So from where that originated to get to that point, they went through several junctions. So this is probably, at this stage, probably been going on half an hour these people controlling the traffic and doing what they wanted.
Yeah, and of course, we should say, we don't know if the Maguire family or Dí Maguire's family, who are undoubtedly, I mean, a terrible tragedy, a family tragedy for them. We don't know if they're privy to any of this, these plans for this kind of a cortege, which sounds just completely unorthodox and completely...
But the reason for my call wasn't as much shocking as it was what I seen. It was just the lack of police presence and the lack of any foresight to think that there could possibly be trouble at this. Anything could have happened at this.
Yeah, I wonder, would there have been a police presence at the cemetery? Because obviously there's a possibility there may be other people, you know, visiting loved ones in the cemetery or indeed burying loved ones in the cemetery.
Yeah, and my partner said the same thing to me. She said, God bless any poor families who are down there today burying their loved ones or having to deal with that amongst, you know, what else they'd be dealing with, you know, and it's... I just said I'd ring to say what I seen.
I mean, that just sounds really the kind of thing that you'll be telling people about for a long time, to be honest.
You know what? I'll forward you on the camera footage so you have it there if you want to put it up on your website so other people can view exactly what I seen, because the whole event is there. It went on for possibly 4 or 5 minutes. The whole event is there from start to finish.
Okay, Jay, well, we'll have our producers have a look at that. And we do appreciate you taking the time to call in and let us know what's been going on out there, because it does sound that was a major event and we'll be hearing a lot more about that.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you, Jay.
Bye.
We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
The audio, the sound of the video that Jay took there out on the Tala Road, out on the N7, on the Belgard Road, I think it was, wasn't it? Of that funeral cortege with all the scrambler bikes that stopped the traffic there on the way to the funeral of Dean Maguire. Yeah, you can see what he was saying about how... What an extraordinary scene that was, and how intimidating that might be if you happen to be passing. Okay, we'll move on. We'll go back to where we started the programme on the issue of trying to get planning permission to build a house on the family farm. I want to bring in Mary now. Mary O'Donnell, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Casey. Good afternoon.
You were listening to Maureen there at the top of the show. You have a similar situation.
Yeah, very similar to Maureen indeed. My husband took over his family farm as well in his early 30s. He inherited the farm and he had been working on the farm up until then. And then I suppose he had another job up until then. He left that job, went back to retrain as a teacher so he could teach and farm. And because of that, I suppose our circumstances changed. He had previously owned a house in the east of the country. We moved west to be near the farm and also to be near the college for him and my job. So we come up with a compromise, I suppose, at that stage. Now we're at a stage where we can move to the farm, and we have been refused planning permission because it's not our first home. And all of that is very well and good, really, if that was the case. But the regulation in the County Development Plan for County Roscommon states, if you own family lands, is how it's stated, they say, if you own family lands, you have to show a connection to the area. And if you have no family lands, you are applicable for planning permission if you have no family lands and it's your first home. So in the response from the County Council, they've said they've acknowledged we have family lands, but they've put the clause of the first home to us, although their regulation clearly states no family lands means.
Okay, yeah. So you're saying the wrong rule is being applied to you, and your in your application is
they,
your,
yeah. exactly.
So where are you now, Mary?
So we live in County Galway, and the farm is in County Roscommon.
Oh, so how far away is that for commuting?
So yeah, so my husband commutes an hour every day up to the farm, and he works near the farm now, so he managed to get a job near the farm. So I suppose ultimately we want to move to the farm for us, for our children, but also for my husband's parents who are elderly as well. This is obviously breaking their hearts. This farm has been in their family for generations, and it was always expected that my husband would take over the farm. And now we can't get planning permission because we have no housing need. We can't live there because we have no house, and yet they're telling us we have no housing need. And it's just the lack of engagement then. We can't talk to the council because, I mean, to be honest, Katie, when the decision came first, I thought it was a mistake. I genuinely did, and we should have appealed at that stage. And we have 4 weeks to appeal. But, you know, we were told, this is obviously a mistake because they've applied the wrong regulation to us and it can be sorted. And I naively thought this could be sorted. I let that process kind of run, and then the time ran out to appeal. And then the advice that we were getting from, I suppose, county councillors and things like that are sell the other house, which we've subsequently done. You know, so we sold the other house, which wasn't the issue in the first place, you know.
Okay, but you're doing everything, yeah. So you're saying, okay, we'll get rid of that. We won't have that on the thing. And has that made any difference?
Well, we've tried to get a meeting, but it's impossible to even get a meeting for them to hear what our issue is, you know. So they've made a judgment. The objective situation, you know, if you look at their regulation and their decision, there's no coherence between their regulation and their decision. It's not matching. So I presumed that this was just going to be a mistake that could be rectified. And as I said before, I think that was naive of me. But, you know, we have to start the whole process now from scratch again.
Because you didn't appeal it within the 4 week period.
Because we didn't appeal.
Because you thought once they sorted out, once they spotted the mistake, it would be sorted without needing to go through the appeals process.
Yeah, and we were also advised by other people, I suppose, like sell the house first before you reapply, which, I mean, to me, that was ridiculous anyway, you know. But we've sold the other house, and I suppose that was what was going to finance the house we're going to build, you know.
What happens if you don't get planning permission, Mary?
Well, we're renting. We've been renting for a long time. I mean, you know, we continue with what we're doing, but I don't think that it's asking too much to have our own home. You know, we're a family. We've never owned our own home together. My husband previously did have a house. I don't think we're asking an awful lot to have our own home on our farm, you know, that we own and that my husband has inherited, and that he farms every day, you know, and that, you know, even before he owned that farm, he was so connected to that farm and the area, you know. So it's really difficult because there's no one to have this conversation with, and there's no one to say, oh, you know, I think you've actually, there's a quality issue in your process here, you know, there's a mistake here, this is something that you could potentially learn from, you know, this has happened, maybe it's just a mistake, you know, let's work together to rectify it, and no blame, you know. But they've contradicted themselves in the decision, and we have nowhere to go with it. The decision is absolute.
Okay, Mary, thank you for that one. I want to bring in Gavin Daly now. Gavin, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie, how are you?
Hi, Gavin. We're listening to, like, Mary there and before her Maureen, and we had several other cases yesterday of people who seem to have, you know, tick all those boxes that they're asked to tick in relation to getting planning permission in, you know, family farms or, you know, farms that they're connected with. And they get turned down. But go on. I know what you tell me how it actually is now.
Well, no, I'm a planner myself, so I feel like I'm going into the lion's den, really wading into this debate, because it's been a very emotive debate in Ireland for many decades, and I research a lot in it. But I think somebody needs to stand up for the planners in this and what's happening on the ground in Ireland.
Will somebody please think of the planners?
Yes, exactly. Because, and I don't think many planners would weigh into this debate, because it is so emotive and it is so politically contentious. But I think the issue here is that when you get these individual, what you might call hard cases, or people talking about these issues on the radio, it misrepresents what exactly is happening on the ground. And I feel for people, especially people who are farmers, who are involved in agriculture and have what we might call, in planning lingo, a rurally generated local need to be in the countryside. But the difficulty is that we're attempting to close the barn door after the horse has bolted, because we have allowed so many one-off houses to be built in Ireland. We have 450,000 the last census, probably about 475,000 now. Some figures go up to 500,000. And the difficulty is that this can't continue. And like to put that into perspective,
but can I just ask you but how many of those, as Maureen was saying, like she sees a lot of one-off housing down her way, she's down in Clifton, but a lot of them are holiday homes that are not actually lived in by families or don't contribute to the local community.
And that's the problem. That's exactly the problem, is that we've allowed all these one-off houses and holiday homes to be built over the years. And now we're in a situation whereby because of various European laws, climate change, all of the issues around public services, providing services for these people, road maintenance, broadband provision, all of these things, as a plan, and national policy now is to focus development back into rural towns and villages to revive rural areas. Because if you look at the statistics, those counties which have got the highest number of one-off houses are also the counties which are faring worse in terms of economic development, because there's no towns of scale, there's no infrastructure, there's no pubs, cafes, nightlife, jobs for these people. So people are leaving. So effectively, there's a change in public policy now in the National Planning Framework. The focus is on building up rural towns and villages to revive these areas. And unfortunately, because of the legacy issues of the past, people, like your last caller there, are getting caught up in this situation, because I can't comment on the individual. There might be individual planning issues on that planning, I'm not sure. But effectively, you know, that's the problem here, is that we have allowed so many, like since 1970, we've built almost 300,000 one-off houses in Ireland. And most of them have nothing to do with agriculture. Most of them are nothing to do with farming. The vast majority of them are between 1 and 5 kilometres of our towns and villages. And we wonder why our towns and villages are dying.
I know, but isn't that a real cold comfort, though, for the likes of Maureen with her two sons, who are both going to be farming that farm? And being told that they have don't have sufficient ties to the area, that they haven't, like, how do you, that's what I think a lot of our calls are on that basis, that what, if that's not local ties to the area that you want to raise your family on the farm that you grew up on, what is, from a planner's point of view, can you explain to us how the logic of that?
Well, the difficulty is that we, in 2005, we introduced new guidelines, and which effectively allowed for a local need in planning. So people with bloodline connections to an area. So I grew up in a one-off house myself in rural County Meath. Technically speaking, I could get planning permission next to my parents because I might fulfil the local need criteria. That has been found effectively, or hasn't been found in the Irish case, but there's proceedings against Ireland from the European Commission that is effectively unlawful. I think you mentioned yesterday on your show. It's called the Flemish Decree. That idea that somebody who has, just because of who they are, rather than the planning considerations, allows them to have a right to build a one-off house is effectively found to be unlawful. So, for example, somebody who grew up in Clondalkin doesn't have a right to live near their parents. You know, it's fundamentally unfair. So effectively, the problem is that we have this local need criteria in Ireland. It's being phased out now because it can't continue. And the new regime, which is starting to come into play more and more, is effectively around rural generation need. Now, from what the last caller says there, it seems that they might have a rural generation need and they could reapply for planning permission. Perhaps they can get over that hurdle. But, you know, that's the difficulty. People are being caught in this situation.
Okay, explain that to me, though, exactly.
So the difficulty is, Katie, is planners, yeah. I mean, you look at individual cases. Planners have to look at the big picture, the public interest of the entire county and the big picture. So if you look at one individual case, it looks like a really hard case and really difficult for people. But if you scale that up across the county, the difficulty is that manifests at a much higher scale in terms of a whole range of public services that which have to be provided to people on the ground, which planning authorities, if you, for example, look at the roads budget for most local authorities, that's upwards of 75% of the road, of the budget is spent on roads. A huge amount of that is to service all of these massive proliferation of one-off houses that we've allowed to develop right across the country. And so all of these small-scale things have scaled up to really big problems for local authorities.
Right. Will you stay there, Gavin? I got really interested in your perspective on this because I want to bring in Liam Galvin. Liam, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You're a councillor down West Limerick.
I am indeed. Look, and I take particular interest in yesterday's show and again today. You know, I've a particular interest in one-off road housing. I'm farming myself here at home on the family farm, and I find it hard to believe it. Look, you have to ask yourself, is it any wonder we have a housing crisis here in this country? When you had the previous speaker there, that young woman speaking, that her husband, her wife and family can't build a house on a family farm. What are we getting at? You know, our own local, our own county development plan, we're in the process of we're in the middle of it at the moment. We have actually up and draft at the moment. We have spent approximately 30, between briefings and meetings in the last 8 months, we have 30 meetings and briefings. We have a lot of work put into it. I think the question above in Galway needs to be asked, you know, and it's down to the public representatives, both locally and nationally. That planner you have on there, just previous to me, he is operating off of a set of guidelines. The guidelines are implemented by, first of all, national level and also at local level. The local and county development plan is adopted single-handedly by the public representatives. In this case, it's the county and city councillors that adopt the county development plan. And they can adopt policy and put policy into their plan. It's up to the planning regulator then if he or she wants to accept or refuse what the councillors put in. I totally, and by the way, I am a Fine Gael councillor, and I totally oppose to any young family, or anyone for that matter, that wants to build a house on their family farm, they should be allowed to do so.
But you heard there what Gavin was saying there, Liam, that, you know, unfortunately, because of mistakes that were made in planning and planning permission that was given, you know, and that this huge proliferation of one-off housing, that individual cases now are hard cases, but that, you know, the planners have to look at the bigger picture.
But down where I come from here in the city and county of Limerick, the one-off rural housing is the only show in town. Because there are not private developments being built. In our local authorities, there are very few private developments being built for one simple reason. The infrastructure is not there. The majority of our sewerage plants within Limerick City and County Council are at their capacity. And if you grew up in a small village, whether it's Tinted Lantern or Tuna Fuller, or those villages that I represent, the people that I represent, if you apply for a house inside the village, Irish Water will come back and say, unfortunately, the planning application is not timely because the infrastructure is not there. In other words, the sewage treatment is at its capacity.
Is that the case all around? Because I know that part of the world very well now.
It's the case for the majority of the parishes that I represent. And you have to ask yourself now, where are these young couples going to live? The next place they have to move to is their nearest town. Our nearest town to a lot of those villages that I'm after naming there is either Abbeyfield or Newcastle West. Newcastle West is our county town, for example. The sewage treatment facility in Newcastle West is at its capacity. Can I ask, where are the people now going to live? And it has a knock-on effect with the GA clubs, the small rural schools, who the principals are ringing me, I won't say on a daily basis, but very regularly. I was talking to a person yesterday evening where the local GA club have now to amalgamate with the adjoining parish because they can't field the team. The fielding of the team is because the people can't live in the parishes where they were born and reared and where they want to live. It's a sad day. The government are going to have to invest in lands, put in service sites, give the people a chance to build affordable housing, service sites for social housing, more so affordable housing. People out there, by the way, want to build, and they will build if they're given an opportunity to build. I just want to finish up on this point. There are two things that have been discussed there today. The family farm was, I think, is a no-brainer, and that needs to be re-looked at in all local authorities, in that girl's case above in Galway, where the public representatives have to be held accountable for this. They have to define what is a farmer. What is a farm? Is a farm 1.5 acres, or is a farm 30 hectares, or what is it? Right. And in our local authority, we have identified a farm being 20 hectares or above. So they need to establish what is a farm above in Galway. And that poor Gerland family deserve to have a house in their farm. Yeah. And the second thing in once off-road housing.
Liam, can I ask you to hold that thought and stay there, please stay there. And Gavin, if you can stay there as well. I just want to cut off for 1 minute because I've got Linda on the line and I don't think she's available for long. But I do want to hear what you're saying. Linda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Just going back to that scene on the... on Belgard, Greenhills Road, wasn't it?
Greenhills Road, yes. Myself and my husband, we were test driving a car, of all things. panic attack. So we were coming down the Greenhills Road and we saw all this smoke. So firstly, we thought there was an accident. So we were kind of getting ready to pull in, but then the traffic was moving. And next we saw these guys on scramblers. Now, my first thing was, geez, God, they have no gear on, you know, with their poor legs as they come off those scramblers. And then they were doing like wheelies. So they were up on their back wheel, kind of up straight, no helmets, nothing. I mean, it was just scary. And then there was a horse-drawn carriage. There was a hearse. And I've never seen so many cars. And like that other caller had said earlier, people crammed in.
Yeah, that's something like the sound you were hearing when you were watching it.
Yeah. Oh my God, it was scary, Katie. It was really scary. Yeah.
And when you say young, what age were the people who were on the scramblers?
Well, look, you know, they looked to me to be like no more than 15, 16. I could have been wrong, but they did look very, very young. But the big thing was to me was they had no protection on, no headgear, nothing. And what they were doing was so dangerous. Absolutely so dangerous.
And then the funeral cortege and the cars, was there family groups in that? Like, was there children?
Yes. It was strange, Katie, because there was a horse-drawn carriage with what looked like to be a coffin in it. Then there was a hearse. Then there was a whole load of cars. And the people were hanging out, like, waving. So, firstly, I thought maybe it was some kind of a stunt, because I thought, if this is a funeral... you know, people are going to look sad or upset or whatever, but they didn't. But then later on, I could see further down after all the cars, there was some more mourning cars. So I'm not 100% sure if the family were immediately after the hearse.
Yeah, you think that might have been a bit of a delay before the family cortege came?
I think it might, because we were kind of held up for a good while, and it looked like then there was mourning cars and there was people in there who looked an awful lot more solemn. Like they were going to a funeral. I say the other cars were just, and the people driving them, there was like very young drivers, these big, powerful cars, all dressed in black and looking. Yeah, I was scared stiff in my driving my car from the garage.
I can imagine, Linda, the last thing you expected to be greeted with out on the Greenhills Road.
Yeah, it was scary, and no police presence. That was quite. Quite amazing, because it's only a stone's throw from Tallaght Police Station.
Yeah, that's what Jay said as well. He was really surprised he didn't see any Gardaí in relation to this. And you definitely, I mean, maybe there were plainclothes, unmarked cars, you know.
It could have been, but what surprised me is that when there's usually a big funeral and the Gardaí know, no matter where it is, they usually kind of, you know, stop the traffic themselves to let people, the mourning cars and that through. You know, just to, you know, to help the funeral cars all get along together, and there was none of that even, you know, directing traffic.
And in that line, like, did everyone? I'm just wondering how everyone reacted and responded to this. Did everyone like calmly and meekly pull in and allow all this to take place?
I think everybody was just astonished, because we literally, there was so much smoke, and then we kind of just stopped, and it, you know, and I think everybody. Was just the guys in front of me were just sitting there looking, you know, because you didn't know what was happening. So it was very difficult to react, you know. And it was a little bit intimidating too, because there were so many of them, you know, and they were hanging out of cars. There was sunroofs, you know, sunroofs open. So first of all, you know, immediately I didn't, even though there was a hearse, and it might sound stupid, I didn't think it was a funeral, because you would expect people to be very maybe respectful and, you know, maybe a little bit more solemn.
Yeah.
So I thought, like, maybe it was a movie or something.
Honestly, as you describe it and as Jay described it, it sounds like a scene from a movie. It sounds so over the top, so chaotic, so and the noise and the drama, the drama
was
around it.
Scary. And there wasn't just one or two of these scramblers. I mean, there could have been seven, eight of them. And if you can imagine, you know, the Green Hills Road is very narrow. So you have a horse-drawn carriage. So you've got horses. You've got these kids on scramblers. You know, we were sitting there thinking, oh, my gee, this is this is not our car. Holy God.
Oh, look, there's another, they've just put up the sound of it again there to give us a sense
very
of what
scary.
It was like to be in the middle of that.
Very, very. And plus the fact that there had been so much smoke and you didn't know where that was coming from.
Yeah, the smoke, smoke's from the scramblers, I think.
Very scary.
Really, when you think that this is the final journey of a young man being taken to the graveyard, is really quite extraordinary.
I was sitting there thinking, you know, if this was my son or my child, you know, I wouldn't have been very happy. Now, in saying that, if the family are happy with that and that's the way they wanted it to go, okay, that's up to them. I just hope they weren't upset by it. I really do, because I would have been very, very upset by it. I would have really been very, very saddened.
It does sound like a new low. Could we say it that way? I mean, in relation
Absolutely. Yes. But I just don't understand, like that gentleman said earlier, you know, if the guardian had been there, it would have been an awful lot more controlled. But then, you know, I don't know, maybe the guardian looked at it and thought, if we turn a blind eye, maybe it'll go easier, because, you know, there was an awful lot of people there in cars that I would suspect people wouldn't want to be confronting.
Yes, absolutely. Linda, many thanks for that.
Okay, thank you.
Great eyewitness for us there out on the Green Hills Road.
I got my car back to the garage safely.
Without a scratch, I hope. Without a scratch.
Scratch, yes.
Thanks for that.
51551
is our text line. Goodbye, Linda.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And before we went to Linda there, we were talking to Liam and Gavin about one-off housing, coming at it from slightly different perspectives. But I just want to get another first-person story in terms of a battle with planning the planning system. Mary McCabe, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Casey.
Yeah, you had a 10-year battle.
I had a 10-year battle. I got planning permission in 2005. I fought for 10 years to the year for the planning, made 8 applications, lived in the mobile home. They were taking a court case against me for having the mobile home on the site, and 2 weeks before the court case, they pulled out of that. This was Dunleary Rathdown County Council. I'm up in Dublin 18 area.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this isn't a family farm scenario. This is a Dublin story. Yeah.
No, this is a Dublin story. This is I'm actually looking down on Dunleary, Killiney, all across the bay. And my father had left me the site. It was 0.6 of an acre. And during the Celtic Tiger, you know, it was impossible trying to get a mortgage together to buy a house. So I said, look, I'll go down the planning route. And again, I had three architects I went through and 8 applications.
And what was the problem?
The problem was where I was one-off housing, building a one-off house up the mountains. They just hadn't given planning permission up here for years and years. And I lived in the area all my life. We can date back probably 200 years plus living in the area. I was caring for 2 elderly aunts and my mother. So I'm working in the area, working in Sandyford Industrial Estate. My child was in local school, local creche. I'm living here all my life.
But they said...
They just said, no, no, no. And I just kept making applications. I just kept at it and at it and at it. And in the end, what I got a planning consultant. And we made a final application. And that was when they wrote back to me looking for additional information. And I said, yes, it looks like I'm getting the planning.
And what was it in the finish that swung it for you?
I'm not really sure, to be honest, because, you know, I don't know whether it was because I had a planning consultant on board, which probably cost me about 5,000 at the time. This is going back like 16 years ago. And
sorry, 5,000 euro for a planning consultant?
A planning consultant, yep, that had a consultation with me and wrote a couple of letters on my behalf.
That is astonishing.
But eventually,
but it was worth it from your point of view as well. It was 5,000 well spent.
It was absolutely worth it at the end of the day. Like it is what it is, and there was nothing I could do about it, but I just kept making the applications and just asking and asking. I'll keep going for 20 years.
As I say this, I just see I have a planning consultant on another line. I didn't actually realise that as I made that comment. Judy Osborne, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi, Judy.
Yes.
Yes, I literally just saw that you were a planning consultant
right, okay.
As I said that.
Yeah.
Is that the going rate for planning consultants?
Well, to be fair, I don't do that sort of work at all, so I don't really know what the rate would be, but I'm not totally surprised about that. I would have thought that was excessive, especially if it was 16 years ago. I wouldn't say that normally. I would have thought 2,000 would have been nearer the mark. If somebody's looking for a one-off house, which, incidentally, I would never, ever take on such work because I think it's not a good idea for the future of our country. But I would imagine that you'd pay a couple of thousand normally for something like that.
When you say you think it's not a good idea for the future, would you, when you hear some of the stories, I don't know if you were listening to the earlier part of the programme, Judy, but, you know, we had Maureen, whose two sons were farming the family farm and have both been refused planning permission on that farm. And we had Mari, a similar issue, wanting to farm the family farm. In those scenarios, would you support one-off housing?
Well, I've been listening both yesterday and today. Because, in fact, if I'd known you were going to be speaking to Gavin Daly, I might not have contacted you because we would have very similar views on those things. But what I was taking from what I heard was they were all hard cases, and I had something to say about almost every one. Now, if it is a genuine application that somebody is farming the land, of course I would support that they should have a home. But that is very, very rarely the case. And in actual fact, very often, there's only part-time farming going on in these small farms where they're looking for housing. And the problem goes back to the fact I am furious about the housing situation in the country. You know, I have family who, you know, can't afford a house. But trying to solve one problem by creating another one is not the way forward.
But Judy, can I put to you that even if it is only part-time farming, and in many cases that's all, it has to be that because people need an off-farm mm-hmm. income to mm-hmm. survive and to keep mm-hmm. food on the table. Mm-hmm. Surely, you know, those communities need families to settle in them and raise their children.
No, because I tell you why. Because with that sort of scattering of the population around, you never actually create a strong enough unit in the local village to actually find enough kids for the school. Because having, you know, a school that has only got one classroom, having three or four extra children isn't going to be enough to give you a new teacher. So what you need to do is to build small critical mass. You need a rational plan that allows a few places to grow big enough so that if you have a village of 5,000 people, you could afford a street cleaner. Obviously, you would have a primary school. At 5,000, you might even have a secondary school. But that never is possible when everybody's scattered. Don't forget, Katie, petrol prices are going up today. Now, I know they've been going up and down. The long-term future is up, 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 up. We are producing a society with totally car dependent. And not only is that difficult because it's going to be expensive for people living out there, but it's also not good for social cohesion. You have a lot of rural isolation. Look, a lot of the stories I've heard from you on the radio talk about awful situations where if that is the full story, there's something very wrong and the planner has been very faulty. And I would have thought usually on Bar Planola would have sorted that out. That's what they're there for. I had one woman tell the story that the planner told her that if he wouldn't give her planning permission because he lived on the other side of the valley and he didn't want to see it. Well, to be honest, if he said that, he was winding her up. You know, that is not a planning argument. It cannot be used. It would be laughed out of court if it were sent to Ambor Planola like that. So either she was only
an architect, one of our callers, I think was Alec yesterday, an architect who was told that by a planner. In relation to a client. Yeah. But as he said, he was afraid to challenge because these people have all the power and he didn't want to, put the entire client's case in jeopardy.
Yeah. Local planners do like to develop a relationship because they think it works. Actually, I don't agree that it works. I think the rules are the rules. And certainly I'm in County Wicklow. Now, I have plenty of problems with some of our planners, but generally they apply the rules fairly, and where they don't, there should be an appeal, and where that appeal fails, then yes, that is a failure of the planning system, but that isn't, in my experience, it isn't usually the case. One of the biggest faults with the planners is that they don't explain to people why they're not allowed. Yes. You know, they don't explain the bigger picture. They don't explain that with a very dispersed population, the cost of supplying services. I mean, a few years ago, there was a report from the ambulance service saying that they were going to, they needed massive more funding. They couldn't afford to send ambulances to one-off houses in the countryside.
Yeah. Okay, Judy, many thanks for that. Yeah. I have to take my last break and I want to just go to another caller with them. Thank you, Judy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And just in the last minute we have left, I want to bring in Brendan O'Bioglik. Brendan, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are
Brendan,
you?
Brendan, we've little time, but I think people might be familiar with your story because you got a lot of publicity. There was talk of you going to jail at one stage if you didn't get permission from Kerry County Council for your home in...
Well, I was willing to go to jail because I'm listening to these planners here. It's the planners that have caused this problem. There were three houses built in my village in the 60s. Completely within the cluster, and they brought out these rules that you have to have a half an acre to build a house. So that has created these one-off houses and this ribbon development that they talk about. If I go into Dingle, on an acre of land, you can build 15 houses an acre of land. Why do I have to have a half an acre to build within the cluster of the village? If they gave us estate status, like we had before, we could build within the clusters. And to build sustainable one-off housing. These laws are killing the Irish language in the Gaeltacht. The villages are the lungs of the Irish language. And these planning laws are killing the Irish language. There's no fear of the Irish language in Ireland, but they're killing them in the Gaeltacht. The schools are suffering. Three shops and a post office have closed in my area in the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Brendan, I'm going to have to go. We're literally out of time. But this is an issue, I'm sure, it is something that will come back to Liveline again because we've got a huge amount of calls in on it today again. And in particular, that issue, as you say, tying it in with the Irish language and Gaeltacht areas. But I want to thank you for that call. And that's it for today and indeed for this week and from me because Joe is back in this seat next week. So I want to thank you all for all your texts and calls and emails over my time here. I want to thank the entire production team and today's production team, our BCO today, Daniel Keating. On sound, we had Mark McGrath, Angus McNally produced and stand by now for Ray Darcy.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.